Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
It was around 11:30 p.m. when this hell made a landfall. I just wrapped up an 8-hour shift at the movie theater and stayed behind to clean the floors after the last screening because the usual guys were AWOL. That left me sweeping up popcorn and peeling splooge-filled condoms off the seats, alone, well into the night. Just to be clear, we aren't an adult theater, but dark rooms gives people weird ideas. Pay was terrible too, but it's not like I had a choice. You know how it is. When I sloped off to the bus stop that night, feeling 300 years old and bloodshot eyes tingling from the caustic disinfectant fumes, a stiff breeze could have crumbled me into dust and blown me away. And frankly, I would have welcomed it. To add insult to insult to insult to injury, my car was in the shop. This meant blowing an eighth of my wage that day on bus fare just to get home from work, then doing the same tomorrow to get back. Not to mention the added risk of getting knifed by a tweak of a pocket change while in transit. It had happened to friends of mine in the city, and I didn't feel like joining that ever-growing club. It's almost funny, in a twisted kind of way. I'd always known some screwed-up things happened out here. You see it on the news all the time. Assault, robbery, organized crime, poverty and corruption out the ass. But let me tell you, that night, I was about to see the other side of that coin. The worst stuff going on out there. It's happening in the dark. You just don't know about it until it squats in front of your house and takes a dump on your doorstep. Anyway, when I finally arrived at the bus stop, I was so relieved to take the weight off my feet that I didn't even realise someone else was already there, sitting in the far corner. I want to clarify, this wasn't the kind of bus stop where you'd strike up conversation with a total stranger. It was a nasty little place where you'd normally see dirty looking dudes shooting up heroin and sometimes screwing. Unless you've got some wicked speedball yourself, and you're now so high that the flies fornicating on the light bulb above you look like a Playboy centerfold, you keep a lid on it. But, like the dark, silence can do scary things to a person. If it goes on long enough, you'll feel a compulsion to fill it. It's the immutable law behind some of life's worst conversations. And, according to the bus schedule, our ride should have already been there, but our bus was being dispatched from Pluto, I must have gotten held up somewhere around Mars. So, believe me when I say that the silence was freaking plentiful. I got so bored that my eyes started shifting to my fellow stranded passenger-to-be. It was a woman in her early 30s, with dark, greasy-looking hair and a thick duffel coat. A little weird, seeing as it was an unseasonably warm night. Ditto for the leather gloves. I couldn't make out much of her face. She was wearing a cheap medical mask, but there was something peculiar about her eyes. Or rather, eye. I could only make out one of them. She was sitting half in shadow, but the eye I could see was big and buggy. It twitched from side to side like something more interesting was happening than two people sitting at an empty bus stop at too late for a Tuesday night o'clock, and she wanted to drink it all in. Soon enough, things felt so palpably awkward that I finally said something. At this rate, at least we'll be able to catch the morning bus, right? She turned her head to me. Not the kind of spooked cat look most people get when strangers speak to them out of the blue. A cold, methodical twist of the head, like an old Chuck E. Cheese animatronic. She just kind of stared at me, sizing me up with the one eye that moved like crazy and another that hardly moved at all. The woman paused for a little too long, then said, "Yeah, morning, boss." Immediately, I felt kind of guilty for instigating. She had a heavy speech impediment, the kind of Sean Connery on steroids type deal, that turned every S into a heavy, slurring shh, like she was talking with a mouthful. I gave a polite smile and a nod in return, then turned away. Her phone rang. It had a tinny default ringtone that sounded achingly 2007. Then I heard the nostalgic snap of an opening flip phone, and the strange woman with a speech impediment answered. I try not to be an eavesdropper. Curiosity killed the cat and all that. But seeing as it was literally the only other sound around, I couldn't help picking up some fragments of her side of the conversation. God only knows what the hell she was talking about. "Cal, I told you, I hate talking on the phone. Yes, I've got it, on a disc and a thumb drive. Yeah, of course it's damn good. Remember who you're talking to. I'm on my way back now. I can send you a copy in the morning. Yes, asshole, I cleaned up. What the hell do you take me for?" The bus limped up to the curb not long after. If it were possible for a vehicle to be a pack-a-day smoker with a drinking problem, that'd be the bus. The flank was decked out in a peeling ad for the greatest snowman, and the bus driver, currently the only human being actually on the bus, looked like Santa Claus after a messy divorce. But to me, it was sweet salvation. The chariot of fire, here to deliver us from the bus stop at long last. The woman closed the flip phone. We both got up and stood in line outside of Santa's thin pane of bulletproof glass. "Guess we won't have to wait that long," I heard a lisping voice whisper behind me. I sat at the back of the bus. The lights were dim, a small mercy, because it had hid most of the filth inside and let us enjoy the journey in blissful ignorance. The seats and inner walls were tattooed in graffiti, and the occasional empty beer bottle rolled up and down the aisle from backseat to driver with every jolt and shudder. The woman took a little longer than me down at the driver's booth. She paid a fare with a 20 and stood patiently while Santa grumbled and sorted a change. She's definitely going on the naughty list this year, I thought, suppressing a stupid little smile. Then she was walking down the aisle towards me. I felt frozen by the gaze of her one big, overactive eye, now fixed on me. "This seat taken?" she asked, gesturing to the one next to me with a gloved finger. "Nope, be my guest." The stranger took a seat next to me and settled into place with a sigh. The air brakes gave a restful hiss, the engine rumbled once more into life, and the ride began. Just me and her, sitting in the back. She was kind of like a Renaissance painting. The closer you got, the more strange little details you noticed. Like the left eye I hadn't been able to get a handle on before. It looked like a prosthetic, a glass eye, with none of the manic, twitchy energy of the other one. The skin puckered around it slightly, old scars covered up by well-practiced makeup. Then she took off her leather gloves. Her hands looked like old rubber underneath. They were sheathed in the shiny, marbled scar tissue, as though they'd been burned heavily and never fully healed. She didn't have fingernails, just these long, pale, alien digits. Where the scar tissue fed back into the unburnt skin of the wrists, I caught the edge of what seemed like tattoo sleeves underneath her coat. Roses and barbed wire by the looks of it. I didn't say a word. Didn't feel the need to. The nighttime world was rolling past outside, getting closer to my stop, little by little. I would have been more than happy to wait out the journey without so much as another sound. It was her that broke the silence this time. "Name's Sep," she said. I couldn't tell whether she was trying to say Sep or Shep until she kindly clarified. "It's short for sepsis." It was so cosmically cruel for a woman with her particular speech impediment to have a name with three S's in it. Even worse, that she shared it with a deadly infection. Whoever Sep was, it didn't seem like life had been generous to her. "I'm Brian, nice to meet you." Sep smiled behind a mask and pulled a shiny buck knife out of her coat, freeing the blade from the dark rosewood handle with a click. She seemed to register the flicker of surprise in my eyes with a private joy. "Don't tattle, Brian," she said. Before I had a chance to say anything, she started carving something into the back of the bus seat in front of her. Nothing in particular, just random geometric patterns and the occasional stick figure. "I always get bored on these trips." She was carving a spiral into the cheap plastic with a surprising steadiness for those long, scarred fingers. "Normally, I just use a pen, but I left my last one at the studio." I didn't know what the hell to say. A stranger had just pulled a knife at me in the back of a darkened bus, closing in on around 1 a.m. All I could do was latch on to the most normal part of the conversation and run with it until I got to my stop. If I played my cards right, I wouldn't have any extra orifices by then. "Studio, huh?" I said, wrestling with the tremor that wanted to invade my voice. "That's cool. You like an artist?" "Filmmaker," she corrected with surprising urgency, still not taking a real eye off of her carvings. "Well, that's just the catch-all. First and foremost, I'm an actor, and then a writer, director, camera op, post-production. Jack of all trades, master of all trades," she said, narrowing her eye to accompany what I can only assume was a wide smile underneath a mask. "You like movies, Brian?" "Well, I work at a movie theater." "That's not what I asked." I gulped hard, forced a tepid smile. "Yeah, I like movies." Sep was carving an unsettlingly detailed smiley face on the back of the seat now. It'd be a miracle if there was any seat left by the time she got off. Then she started to laugh. "What's so funny?" I asked. "Hello, nice," swiveled back to me. She flicked the buck knife's blade back into its handle. "You smell like jizz," she said, between wet, throaty chuckles. I sighed. "Yeah, occupational hazard." Sip tucked the knife back into a duffel coat and reclined in a seat, studying the ads for medication and personal injury lawyers slapped across the bus's ceiling with detached interest. Personally, I was just relieved she was no longer brandishing a weapon. "So I'm guessing you like movies?" I forced a smile. Her one eye lit up again, like the last thing she ever expected was a follow-up question. Sep nodded. "You bet your ass. I've been working in the film industry for 10 years now." "Oh, wow. I didn't even know there was an industry around here." "You'd be surprised," she spat back with defensive speed. "Wherever there's an audience, there's an industry. And trust me, there's always an audience." There was something off about Sep, beyond even the knife and the lack of social graces. It was the energy she put out. This weird kind of dangerous static you could only feel when you were actually there, right next to her, like she was some kind of human bug zapper. You can feel it radiating off of people sometimes, and it was radiating off of Sep like a Chernobyl nuclear reactor. "How'd you get into that?" I asked, figuring it was what she wanted to hear. Sep drummed the long, alien digits on the seat she'd just spent the last few minutes maiming. "I always knew I was going to be a movie star when I grew up. Dad didn't think I had it in me, but he was just bitter. Ever since Mum left, he'd just sit by the fireplace and drink. Then he'd get mean and start talking with his fists." I hadn't signed up to receive Sep's whole autobiography, but I had no intentions of disrupting her flow. As she spoke, I noticed the wet patch was expanding on the left side of her mask, below the endlessly staring prosthetic eye. "Dad never got me. He didn't get that I was meant to be an actor, that I could make him proud up on the silver screen. He said I was ungrateful, that I was going to run away just like Mum." "Stupid old ass," she hissed. "I got sick of hiding cuts and learning how to cover up shyness. This wasn't supposed to be my life, you know. I was meant for something bigger." Sep's one bulging eye made frantic contact with my own, searching for approval. I gave an emphatic, "please don't hurt me" nod that seemed to satisfy her. She continued. "So I saved up, did odd jobs, hid my money where he wouldn't find it, and eventually bought a plane ticket to LA. I had it all planned out. I was going to live my dream. But the night before I was set to leave, the asshole found my ticket. He found my damn ticket. She let out a manic, delirious laugh that I swear even made Santa glance back to check on us. I kept looking outside, searching desperately for my stop. It couldn't be much longer, I knew that much. But until then, I was Sepp's captive audience, and this wannabe movie star certainly knew how to command the stage. Next thing I know, he's knocking the wind out of me, saying everything he's been telling me for months. Oh, you think you're going to be in movies? You think you've got a face for the big screen, do you? So I'm laying there, bleeding and crying, and Dad grabs the poker out of the fireplace. It's been sitting on the coals for a while now, so it's real hot. In the moment, my eyes can't help but dart over to her hands. Those pale masses of scar tissue, and the ever-expanding wet patch on her mask. He says to me, "Get this," he says to me, "let's see how the camera's like you now." And he presses the damn poker against my face. Let me tell you, Brian, it hurt like hell. Like literal hell. Fire and brimstone. I tried to grab it and pull it off, but he just held it there. 10 years later, I can still remember the hissing sound. And the smell. Oh man, the smell. She tentatively lifted a scarred hand to her face and hooked a shaking finger around the left strap of her mask. It's almost funny. When Sepp pulled away the mask, the first thing that caught my eye was a silver glint of a nose ring, rather than the ruin underneath. The lower left side of her face was a mess of stringy scar tissue and exposed teeth, leading all the way back to the jawbone, up to the wizened left cheek and beyond. The teeth were shiny, with thick strands of saliva, worked up over the course of the story. The side that could still be called a face seemed to grin. I lost an eye, lost half my mouth, couldn't move my hands for weeks. They got all messed up when I tried to grab the poker, you see. And even worse, all those asshole casting agents wouldn't take my calls. Nobody wants to represent the freak with a messed up face and a stupid voice, Sepp said, spraying spittle out of the large hole on the left side of her face. She dabbed away the mess with a handkerchief, one I assumed she probably kept for this purpose in particular, then hooked the mask back around her ear and sighed. Left home after that, conversations around the dining room table got a little awkward, and I couldn't even eat cereal without spilling the milk out of my face. But I didn't let it stop me. Even if nobody would cast a person like me, I'd work myself into the industry sideways. That's how Rodriguez did it. You ever read about Rebel Without a Crew? Changed my life. I saw it in the distance. The next stop was mine. I was so close to being free. I reached out and pressed the stop button next to the seat in front of me. I learned the ropes and bought the equipment myself, Sepp continued. I've made hundreds of movies since then. Hundreds, and I'm in all of them. I even put my dad in one of them. And once I found a distributor, I started to make a living off of it. My movies get bought by people all over the world. I'm living my dream, Brian. The bus finally ground to a halt, and I stood up. It was nice meeting you, I said to Sepp. And I'm glad it all worked out in the end. As I started to walk away, one of Sepp's scarred hands grasped my wrist. She was startlingly strong. I couldn't move away, even if I wanted to. You're a good listener, Brian, she said, reaching into a coat with the other hand. Here, take this. She shoved a DVD case into my hand. It's my latest movie, and I think you'll really like it. It's an original copy, worth a lot of money. My distributor would be mad if he knew I gave this to you, so don't tattle, okay? She gripped my wrist, squeezing an assenting nod out of me like fresh lemon juice, then finally let me go. Hey, you're getting off, buddy. I ain't got all night, Santa called back from his plexiglass booth. I started walking down the aisle towards the door, hearing her last few lisping words echo through the bus behind me. Can't wait to hear what you think, Brian. As the bus pulled away, I saw Sepp waving at me from the window, and I gave a half-hearted wave in return. The bus disappeared into the distance, taking her with it. Within a few days, my car would be back in service, and I'd never have to slumber at the nightmare bus stop ever again. The ordeal was finally over. I could relax at long last. I know what you're thinking. Did you watch the DVD? Hell yeah. Of course I did, but not straight away. Truth be told, that night I left it on my coffee table and went to sleep. Life's wheels don't stop spinning because some random eccentric decides to pull a knife and spill the guts to you on the bus. In less than 12 hours, I'd be selling tickets, prepping screen rooms, and swapping popcorn and mess for minimum wage once more. The DVD case sat there on my coffee table for 3 days, gathering dust and occasionally getting used as a coaster. It was only when the weekend finally hit that I could actually watch it. And in hindsight, I wish that week had never ended, and that weekend had never rolled around. I wish that DVD case had remained a coaster until the day I died. I was expecting one of three things: some home movie vlog BS, DIY adult movie, or Neil Breen level delusional ego trip. What I didn't anticipate was the actual content of that goddamn DVD. When I hit play, the words "Piggy Goes to Slaughter 2" flashed up on a dark screen set to blaring techno music. Smash cut to a large man, bound up with a series of leather harnesses, suspended from a meat hook in a darkened room with sheet plastic all over the ground. His skin was slick with sweat and blood. The only clothes on him were some soiled underwear, yellowed with pee, and a rubber pig mask that covered the top half of his head. It looked stapled on. The man struggled against his restraints, his screams muffled by lipstick red ball gag. Another figure entered the frame. They were tall, dressed in boots, tattered jeans, a leather butcher's apron, and a short-sleeved shirt that showed off complex tattoos running up and down the lengths of both arms. Roses and barbed wire. They held a long, dirty buck knife in one of their gloved hands. "Squeal, piggy piggy, squeal." Seb's thick, unmistakable lisp mangled the S both times. I could hardly believe what I was seeing. She was wearing a leather mask that covered more of her face this time, with her dark, greasy hair tied back and her one eye swiveling madly, taking it all in. The whole thing was depicted in one, still, indifferent wide shot, probably from a tripod set up a few feet away. The composition and lighting left nothing to the imagination. She ran her fingers down the bound man's abdomen, playing with his chest hair and petting him like an animal. He quivered in fear and whimpered pitifully at the touch. Sepp laughed and turned to the camera, presenting the knife for all to see. I knew it well. It was the exact same knife she was using on the seats. Had she been filming this earlier that day, just hours before she got on the bus with me? "We're going to take some of Piggy's prime cuts," she said with an exaggerated enunciation like a sadistic kids' TV host. "Then we're going to open up his belly and play around with what's inside." I called the police that day. It was the only way I could live with what I saw. Sepp was living out all her twisted little movie star fantasies, and other people were dying to make them a reality. There'd be nothing to gain from going over every awful little detail in that video. But I'll tell you two things. It was a long video, and the man that Sepp called Piggy was alive for most of it. And believe me, that isn't a good thing. I told the cops everything: where I'd met Sepp and when, what I'd heard on the phone call, that name Cal, the claim about a studio in the city, the story about how her father maimed her, the fact that she'd apparently made hundreds of movies, and someone, somewhere, was distributing them all over the world. And of course, I gave them the DVD itself. If I didn't give it to them, I would have destroyed it. That thing didn't belong anywhere other than rotting in an evidence locker. If that's where this whole thing ended, I don't think I would have shared this. I would have left it in the hands of the police and tried to forget it, tried to go back to living my boring little life of selling movie tickets, cleaning floors, and living paycheck to subpar paycheck. I figured a movie star like Sepp would probably just get off on the attention anyway. But that isn't where it ended. Because earlier today, I found a new DVD case sitting on my coffee table. Written on the disc in Sharpie were the words, "Piggy Goes to Slaughter," and a handwritten note was slotted into the case. The following is the content of that very note. "You promised not to tattle. Very disappointing. But what concerns me more is that you didn't enjoy the movie. Don't worry, I don't blame you for that. I made the mistake of sending you the second Piggy Goes to Slaughter first. And trust me, you lose a lot without the context and setup of the original. Just to be a pal, don't tell anybody about this one. After all, I still need to cast a new lead man for part 3. Signed, Sepp."
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.